You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Humans are social animals. We have a desire to hang around our own kind, even if it's simply to briefly exchange greetings. But if that's true, does the need for a community extend to the world of ghosts? And then we travel to Russia to take a look at the story of three drunk men having a good time. But when a security guard shows up and tells them no drinking in the sauna, they have no idea that one of them is going to have an experience that's out of this world. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. Your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys are having tons of fun doing whatever you're doing. We got a lot of stuff to cover today. So first off, running into Dead Rabbit Radio command, everyone get on your feet and give it up for Tony. Woohoo, yeah, yeah, he's all running on in. Tony's running on in, giving us a big old hug. Tony came to see me at the Oregon Ghost Conference and do other stuff. He was there the whole weekend. It's not that I was the only reason he showed up, but Tony came to the Oregon Ghost Conference, and I met him last year at the Oregon Ghost Conference, him and his girl, Tori. Now, last time I gave him just a group shout-out. It was Tony and Tori. This time, they're getting individual shout-outs. That's why, Tony, you are the captain, the pilot of this episode. If you guys can't support the show financially, if you guys can't see me in person, that's fine, too. It really, really is. It really is. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. I really, really appreciate all the support, financially or just word of mouth. Anything you can provide. Tony, let's go ahead and get this party started. I'm going to toss you... We haven't used this in a while. Tony, I'm going to toss you a little engineer's outfit with a little cap and a big old shovel. Everyone climb on board the Carpenter Caboose as Tony fills this engine full of coal. Back-breaking labor for the people who love this show. Tony, go ahead, start shoveling in that coal. We're leaving behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Chug, chug, chug us all the way out to Florida. Chugga, 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 choo, choo. We're headed all the way out to Florida. Specifically, we're headed to Clearwater, Florida. And even more specific than that, we find ourselves standing outside of Eisenhower Elementary School. Home of the pandas, I say, as I hand each of you a janitor uniform and a mop. We all now have jobs at Eisenhower Elementary School as janitors. And let's go clean this place up. The year is 2000. So we walk in and all the kids are gone. This is after school. So there's no little kids around. The teachers are all at home dreaming of the homework they will assign the next day. We walk in, we're wearing like the coveralls. We each got a mop. One or two of you has a broom, but the rest of us have mops. And we walk into the school and it's quiet. Empty. In the year 2000, the janitorial staff started to complain to their boss. They're like, hey, Jimmy, Principal Jimmy, I got a problem. You know, I'm here to do the janitor stuff. I got the mop and the bucket and the water, and I'm mopping up. That's what I get paid to do. But the problem is, this little kid keeps running around. Principal's like, what? Yeah, I know it's like 8 o'clock at night. I know it's 8 o'clock at night. And all the kids should be at home in bed. But me and the boys, when we're doing our job cleaning stuff up, every so often we'll see a little kid run by. And here's the thing. We know it ain't no living kid. Nah, this kid's from beyond the veil. This kid, the principal's like, what? So just spit it out. Spit it out. This kid is from the nether realms. The kid's a ghost, Principal Jimmy. This school is haunted. We keep seeing this ghost running down the hallways, and it's scaring us. Being a janitor is already creepy enough because you're usually by yourself in a very lonely place. The school's haunted. What happened was the janitors kept hearing banging noises when, again, no one else was around them. They began seeing the ghost of a little boy running down the hallway wearing a baseball uniform. Unsettling, to say the least. There is one thing, if you're working at a school and you see the ghost of a teacher, of an adult, listen, that's creepy too. I'm not going to say that that's not creepy. I'm not going to say that you'll be like, oh, whatever, ghost schmost, and you try walking through it. That'd be creepy too. But a ghost boy running, that's creepier. I think that's fair to say. I think they're both creepy, but one can be creepier. But there weren't ghosts seen previous to the year 2000. What's interesting is in the year 2000, the school board, the local school board, decided to have some renovations done. And while we do know in ghost lore, when renovations are being done on a piece of property, it can anger the spirits. You can start seeing strong poltergeist activity. I mean, literally, that's one of the most common ghost stories out there. What's interesting about this whole story is interesting. I'll try to break it down as best as possible. What's interesting about this is they had not started the renovations yet. The school board had simply voted to do the renovations. No work had begun. No work crew had even shown up except for the janitors. There was no construction workers there, nothing. Simply by announcing they were going to do renovations on the school, all of a sudden, ghostly activity started at that school. Banging in hallways where there was nobody, the ghost of a little boy wearing a baseball uniform running down the hallway. The story was that this boy was the ghost of a young kid who used to attend that school years ago. He was hit by a car and killed right in front of the school. The night janitors said, "We don't want to work here. I want to do the day shift. There's no openings at the day shift. Okay, fine. I'm going to go be a janitor somewhere else." The night janitors were refusing. Schools usually have a day janitor and a night janitor team. The night janitors were refusing to work there. They knew this was a ghost and it was creepy. So the principal, like, you can't force people to work, right? The people can just quit. You can tell them you have to do it and they quit. And apparently that's what was happening. People were refusing to do it. So the principal, the school district had to go to the day janitors and said, "Hey, man, how you doing? You're doing a really good job. People are really complimenting you on how waxy and shiny these floors are. But hey, I got an idea, man. We want to give you a promotion. You'll get a raise. If you believe in the paranormal, you'll see a ghost." And they're like, "What? Everyone loves ghost stories. You know, don't you want a ghost story to tell people?" The day janitors are like, "We're not doing it either. You're not going to get us to work at night. It's too creepy." Now, of course, when you have events like this, you're going to have all sorts of reactions. You're going to have people who downplay it and say that's not true. You're going to have people who spread the word. You just find it absolutely fascinating. And then you're going to have people like you and me who go, "Oh, dude, let's try documenting this. Like, if this is actually a haunting, let's see if we do an investigation." Apparently, at some point, a tape recorder was left on one night. Like, they just let it run. They're trying to get EVPs. And what they caught, we don't have access to it. You're like, "Wow, Jason's about to play an EVP for us?" This wasn't posted online, but the story goes that they caught the sound of the little boy talking. But not just that. All of that would just be kind of a cool ghost story locally in Clearwater, Florida. If you were a kid student at this elementary school, it would terrify you. That's kind of all it would be. What's super interesting about it is that this tape recorder has the conversation. You can hear the little boy's voice and the voice of a adult talking to the boy. assumedly a teacher or staff member who had also died. He didn't die at the same time as the kid. He wasn't driving the car. But they believe that this is a teacher who passed away. One of the possibilities is the school's first principal was named Mary Zeff. This real person. We did some cool research on this story, and I'll really get into it. Mary Zeff, she ran the school for the first 2 years. She was principal. She was loved by the students. She loved the school. But eventually, she promoted out of that job. Apparently, there's stuff bigger than principal. I always thought like every teacher wanted to be a principal, but then they can be like accountants, like district accountants or whatever. She got promoted out of the elementary school principal position, but she always loved that school. She always spoke very highly of it. Right after she retired in the early 1990s, she died. And whether or not that's her voice, people say that you could smell her distinct perfume at times in this building as well. But none of these hauntings started pre-2000, pre the announcement they were going to start doing these renovations. So you had sounds of banging. You would see the little boy running down the hallway. You had the recording of the student and the staff member or principal or teacher talking to the student, and then you have Mary Zeff's perfume. Once all the renovations were completed, all activity stopped. No more perfume, no more running phantom boy, no more bangings, nothing. Interesting ghost story for a couple different reasons. One, again, super common, renovations and ghosts, textbook, ghost activity. The ghost stopping when the renovations stop. Sometimes that happens, but these ghosts seem to be so tied to this school, I would have thought they would have continued on after the renovations. All this stuff is super interesting. The idea that, this is why I wanted to cover this. This is so bizarre. You have two separate ghosts, at least two ghosts. Mary may not be the one caught on tape talking to the boy, but just for sake of clarity, let's say that it is. So you have two ghosts. You have Mary Zeff. You have this little boy talking to each other. Do ghosts communicate with other ghosts? It's one of those questions that when you ask it, your initial answer is, well, of course. And then you go, well, wait a second, do they? And what I mean is there's two separate components of that. The entire idea of being a medium is that you're a medium between the living and the dead. You're a communicator between the two. There, according to ghost lore, there must be some sort of afterlife internet where if I'm a medium and I can talk to this ghost, let's call her Gracie, and now I'm talking to you. You come to me and you say, I want to know. My nephew died tragically. I want to know how he's doing in the afterlife. I talk to Gracie and Gracie talks to your nephew. Or Gracie contacts your nephew. The nephew comes here so I can channel him and speak. He can speak through me. There's all these different options. That is in a supernatural network, if that makes sense. There doesn't seem to be any disagreement on when you are dead and in the afterlife, whatever that may be, that they talk to each other. That's the whole idea behind spiritualism. It's not that you're just talking to one ghost in the ether. Now, that's different than a ghost in a haunted house. We've covered enough stories like this. We covered that one. I talked about it at the Oregon Ghost Conference about the young man who, him and his girlfriend were in a horrible accident, car accident. He ran into a gas station to get a knife. And before they could give him a knife, he collapsed and died. It turns out that the traffic accident crushed his esophagus. But there is this thing that the human body can do that he got up and ran to the convenience store and said, I need a knife. There's been a car accident. And this does happen. You have a crushed esophagus. You are dead. There's no way to survive this. But adrenaline keeps you going for this moment. Now, he died and his ghost was in the convenience store, and it was unaware that his girlfriend was safe. He was unaware that just 200 yards down the street, or however far away it was, his girlfriend was rescued. He didn't know any of that. He haunted the convenience store for quite a long time until people began to tell him, hey, listen, she's okay. You need to move on. That's a whole point when you bring people in to help ghosts to the other side. They're trapped there. They're trapped in this location. They may not know that they're dead. They may be scared of going to the afterlife. They have no communication with anybody. They try to communicate with us, but they're completely cut off of the internet. They're completely cut off from this supernatural information highway. Otherwise, these ghosts would be like, you know, the ghost of his aunt who died in 1912 would be able to say, hey, Charlie, your girlfriend's alive. Don't worry about it. Come up here with us. There's a breakdown in the communication. Here we have a situation where we have two ghosts in the same location having a conversation. That's the tricky part. Two separate ghosts. Listen, if they were both murdered at the same time, if they both got killed in the car accident, then it would make sense that they would converse with each other. But imagine if Mary Zeff dies in the early 1990s. She's in this school. And she's going to communicate with a ghost boy who she may or may not have ever known. This was super interesting. This is one thing I love about doing this show. I found this story on Shadowlands.net, and this is the way I approach stuff like this. Cool ghost story. I go, but what is true about it? What is true about it? I found about Mary Zeff. I found people talking about her. Was a little boy killed? I mean, you know, it's horrible to look this stuff up sometimes, but was a little boy killed outside of this school? I began looking around. Paul Argent is his name. That is the name that locals believe that this kid's name is Paul Argent. They're a little iffy on the dates, but either in 1975 or late 70s, early 80s, because people are kind of given different dates. Apparently, there was a kid named Paul Argent who went to this school, who loved baseball. He was walking down Drew Street, which is the street right outside of Eisenhower Elementary School. He's walking down Drew Street, and a drunk driver jumped the curb and ran him over while he was on the sidewalk. He was completely in the clear. A drunk driver runs him over right after school. A woman online going by the name Sherry Sanders, she said, I remember that. She goes, I was actually the first adult. I was a staff member at that school. I was the first adult on the scene. I saw it, and I ran over there, and I saw Paul, and he'd been hit by this car. There was another version, a same kid, but another version saying it was not a drunk driver per se. It was a 16-year-old who had just gotten in a car accident down the street. And in a panic, as they were fleeing that car accident, jumped the curb and ran over Paul. Now, what's interesting is both of those stories might be half true. It could have been a drunk 16-year-old, which would account for the first accident. And this accident, killing this boy, could also be just a teenager who was driving so poorly they appeared to be drunk as well. But so we have two different ghosts. You know, Mary didn't die until the early 1990s. But here they are conversing with each other. And what would they be talking about? Even if the tape recorder didn't pick up exactly what they were saying, you could hear the sound of an adult's voice. You could hear the sound of a kid's voice, but you didn't know exactly what they were saying. That's fair. But what were they talking about? What would ghosts talk to each other about? If you step back and think about it, that's a really creepy question. And imagine if you, I mean, sometimes humans have a hard enough time with neighbors and roommates. Imagine if you were haunting a place with someone you didn't really like. That would be terrible. I mean, I hope these two ghosts get along. But, I mean, you're manifesting together as spirits. What do you say to each other? Like, what would two ghosts talk about? I almost couldn't, like, I can make a bunch of jokes, obviously, but I just can't imagine what they would discuss. But that seems to be the case at this school. And again, that makes you ask the question, can ghosts from different hauntings talk to each other? It's creepy to think about what they could be discussing. Could be completely mundane. But because humans are social animals, it wouldn't shock me that they talk to each other. The question then just becomes, what would they talk about? And again, it might be completely mundane, or it could be subjects and topics that we can't ever even consider. I will say this. I said that the haunting started in 2000 and then they ended when the renovations were done. That was talking about the main hauntings there. Of course, it's an elementary school. There's ghost stories abound around that. You had someone online going by the name Michelle. She said that she attended the school from 86 to 89 and she would talk to a janitor all the time. I know making friends is hard, and I know sometimes janitors can be really cool kids, but good to have work, good to have age-appropriate friends as well. I'm not saying the janitor is a creepo, but you know what I mean? It's good to interact with your own age group. Michelle said when I was going to school, there was this janitor that I would talk to all the time, and then eventually I learned that he didn't work there. He was a ghost. And she also said that every so often she would see a ball throwing a ball in the air. But once he threw it in the air, he would then just stand there and the ball would hit the ground. And she thought that was so weird why the kid would do that. And he'd pick it up, he'd throw it up in the air again, but he wouldn't make any movement to try to catch it. The ball would just hit the ground. I'll be honest, that's creepier for whatever reason. Just the visual of that. I guess probably like the infinite loop of the futile. That's a creepy image. That boy didn't exist either. He was a ghost, apparently. You're like, oh, that's just a kid who's bad at catching stuff. So there are ghost stories, because the more research I was doing digging into this, the main ghost story that you will see commonly associated with this school is the one that started in 2000 and ended at the end of the renovations, and that was it. But you'll every so often you'll find someone online saying, no, this bathroom's haunted. I went there. The girl's bathroom's haunted, or you have the story of Michelle with the janitor. However, most of the sites will talk about the story of Mary Zephyr and Paul Argent. Fascinating nonetheless. Fascinating nonetheless, which stories are accurate. All these kids, right? You're in elementary school. Of course, you're going to have a super vivid imagination. Schools are creepy by nature. Everything's huge. All the doorways are 2-3 times taller than you. It's just a very weird for a kid. It's like living in a Tom Petty music video for a kid to be in an elementary school. So, of course, they may see stuff. They may imagine stuff. It's hard to tell. But it's super interesting. If you're in that area, I suggest you quit your job and get a job at Eisenhower Elementary School. Get a job as a night janitor and see what you find. Tony, let's go ahead and toss you the keys to the world. Famous Carpenter Copter, we are leaving behind Florida. Fly us all the way out to Russia. First off, we got to give a shout out to Sustained Disgust. Sustained Disgust created, I say this all the time, I can't hype it enough, honestly. Sustained Disgust put together a iceberg. He's done a couple of these. And Sustained Disgust does what I think is the biggest weakness of icebergs. He adds links to everything. When he finds it, he links to the article that he found this stuff. It's super obscure stuff. It's honestly one of the best icebergs out there. I think there's gatekeeping in the iceberg community. So people don't put the links there because then it feels like more special elite type knowledge. And it shouldn't be. This knowledge should be available to everybody anytime they want to learn about these topics. That's why don't you put paywalls up. That's why I don't have episodes you have to pay money to listen to. Because to me, this is important research. The topics might be goofy, for sure. But I'm trying to make it so when I die, these episodes are still out there. And more importantly, the show notes and the links are still out there. I think this is important work. It is funny. You're like, Jason, you cover a lot of disgusting stories. Like yesterday's episode. I don't know how important that was. But sustained disgust is part of that. He's adding these links so you can check this stuff out too. Instead of just having a huge graphic and people just read it and go, what's that one? What's that one? What do you click on it? Now you can see. But anyway, sustained disgust, huge shout out for you. Great work. Really, really appreciate it. It's January 14th, 1978. It's a cold day in Rostov-on-Don, Russia. Rostov-on-Don. Rostov-on-Don. We're walking around. We got our parkas on. It's January, dude. January in Russia. Big old furry hats. Like, are we getting attacked by cats? I don't know, maybe. But it's mostly the snow noise. We're covering up on our face with our hands. And we're walking through this big snowstorm to get to the Oktyabrnonik Sports Complex. I think it's over here, guys. Hold on to my hand. Hold on to my hand and I'll lead us. We finally get to the sports complex and shut the door from the cold winter weather. We start taking off all of our furs and we're standing around now in our underwear. And we're like, wow, Russia is a pretty intense place. There's a lot of snow and there's all that noise outside. It sounded like a bunch of cats, but it was supposed to be wind. And now we're in the Oktyabrnonik Sports Complex. And I go, guys, come with me, come with me. And I open the door to this big sauna. And we see three people sitting in the steam bath area. We see these three 18-year-olds. Nikolay Leontiev, Mikhail Babkin, and Vitaly Krakchevenko. We see them sitting there in the steam bath, celebrating the start of a new year. They're a couple days off, you know, it's January 16th. January 14th, but who cares? They're sitting in the steam bath. They have with them some food. I'm eating, like cheese and crackers or something. I don't know what typical steam bath food is. Grapes. And while they're snacking on that, they also brought some champagne with them. They're like a toast. The toast to a new age. Chink, clink, clink, clink. A new age. 1978 Russia. And because it is Russia, they also have a bottle of vodka there. And they're like, Dasvidanya, comrades. Let us drink this potato juice and toast once more to the great Soviet Union. Glug, glug, glug. They're drinking and stuff like that. Now, listen, I'll be honest with you. I don't know much about steam baths. I will say it's probably not a good idea to drink alcohol in them. I'm sure that that could lead to some pretty serious health problems. Maybe champagne you could get away with. But these guys are killing vodka as well. And also they're not supposed to, whether or not it's health related or not, you're not supposed to drink or eat in the steam bath area. And eventually a security guard shows up. He must have heard them loudly crunching on grapes. Anyways, the security guard comes in to check and sees these 18-year-olds drinking vodka. In the steam bath, he's like, guys, no, absolutely not. Listen, all three of you could die. And even if you guys don't die from intense dehydration, you gotta leave. You guys are just not allowed to be drinking in the steam bath. Let's go. So, okay. So they all get their clothes back on and the security guard is escorting them out of the building. He doesn't trust them. They won't sneak back into the steam bath. So he's like, I'm going to take you guys down the back entrance. You guys are going outside. Oh, man, come on, dude. So the security guard starts walking him towards the rear exit, which the way it was laid out was a very long and narrow corridor. So you couldn't walk side by side. They had to walk in a single file line. The floor was concrete. was a smooth or relatively smooth concrete floor, narrow walls, just walking towards the exit. And the order of walkers was the security guard was in front. Behind him was Nicole? The guy behind him was Mikhail, and Vitaly was bringing up the rear. And they're walking down this hallway. When all of a sudden, Mikhail trips and lets out a loud scream. Ah! Prompting Nicolay to turn around and watches his friend phase through the wall and then vanish. Mikhail no-clipped, to use a video game term. He glitched through the wall. This solid wall became nothing more than mist to this young man, and he phased through the wall and was gone. Within a blink of an eye, he is no longer standing in this long concrete hallway. Now, because it's such a narrow corridor, with no doors on either side, they're puzzled, to say the least, right? To say the least. Imagine you're that security guard, and you hear all this. You hear the guy screaming, now you hear the friends freaking out, and they're like, where'd he go? Mikhail, where'd you go? Oh, Mikhail. Security guard has had enough of these drunk buffoons, but when he turns around and sees there's only two people in that hallway, and he doesn't see the third running down the hallway trying to hide. When you have a third party, and more importantly, a sober third party who's witness to these events, questions really get raised here. So Vitaly, Nicolay, and the security guard, they know that Mikhail must be here somewhere. You could say all day long, he fell through the wall. If a drunk was saying that to you, you're like, something happened. He did not fall through the wall. Look at me. He did not fall through the wall. No, I saw him. He just like went right through it. He went right through it. It's a protest of a drunk. It's this young kid who's getting kicked out, who's not sober by any stretch of the imagination, saying that his buddy vanished. Now, that floor was smooth, like they had observed it. There was no pothole or any place for Mikhail to trip. But he had tripped, and he, as he was tripping, fell against the wall and disappeared. The watchman realizes, though, we gotta find this guy. Like, he must have ran away. He must have just ran away, and this is some sort of stupid thing. But I gotta go find, if he did run away, they're saying he fell through the wall. I don't know if Vitaly actually saw it, and that's an interesting thing, too. Because Vitaly's right behind him, but if Vitaly was looking away, or looking down at his shoes, or he is drunk, they're all drunk, but you know what I mean? Like, Vitaly, we don't know for a fact that Vitaly saw Mikhail no clip through the wall. But anyways, the watchman's like, I gotta find the kid one way or the other. Like, if he didn't magically go through the wall, we gotta figure that out. But if he ran back into the health center, if he's back in the community center, I gotta drag him out anyways. So they begin searching for Mikhail. The watchman and the two friends begin looking all over for this young man. The first place they check is the wall. They begin to run their hands along the wall to see if there's some sort of false opening, some sort of tunnel, something that could explain what happened, but they can't find anything. So they begin to expand their search. The three of them begin searching the sports complex after looking for a doorway or some sort of false wall in that quarter. They begin walking all over the sports complex looking for him. Again, you got to imagine the watchman probably just getting madder minute by minute that he's having to waste all this time finding some drunk kid who's running around. While Vitaly and Nicolay are incredibly worried. It'd be one thing if your friend was lost. It'd be another thing if your friend was lost and you knew they were drunk. Now you're really worried. But if your friend was lost, drunk, and fell into an alternate reality, all bets are off. You're going to be as worried as possible. Eventually, though, the three of them hear a noise. And they begin running towards the sound of the screaming. They hear Nikolai screaming. And the screaming's coming from the corridor. The long, narrow corridor that they were all walking down when this started. They run into the corridor, and sure enough, there is Nikolai. He's standing there just screaming. When all of a sudden his head kind of snaps and he looks over at the wall. He looks over at the wall as if something grabbed his attention, and he's continuing to scream and scream. His friends run over to him, the security guard comes over, and he's completely panicked. He's totally freaking out. They need to know where he was at. They've been searching for him for an hour. And they told him that. They go, dude, we've been looking for you for an hour. Where were you? Where were you? And Nikolai looks at him and goes, an hour? It's been an hour? Crazy story. So what happened was Nikolai is walking down the hallway when he trips and stumbles against the wall and then phases right through it. Now, what's super interesting, before we get on that little cliffhanger, we have covered twice now two separate stories from different websites, different decades, different locations where these stories have taken place, where people are walking in a very familiar location, they trip in a very normal location, like down a forest trail, they trip, and then they are in a completely different reality. I think you even have the episode, I think it's called Tripping Into a Reality or another. I'll put it in the show notes. We've covered at least two of those, and you know, if it happens once, it's a occurrence, twice, it's a coincidence, but three times, it's a phenomenon. We now have three stories where somebody is walking. I remember the story, the person was walking through the woods down this trail and they tripped and they looked down thinking they were going to see like a dip or a root or something that caught their foot, but the ground was perfectly fine. There was no reason for them to trip, and when they looked up, they were in a completely different forest. Completely different area. They knew immediately. Not only were they not where they were just two steps ago, they may not even be on this earth. All three of these stories involve someone stumbling and then basically breaking the laws of physics. Nikolai was walking down the hallway. He was drunk and he tripped and slipped into the wall and passed through it like it didn't even exist. And he's standing up now. Even though the momentum taken through the wall should have caused him to stumble and fall to the ground, it's the way the world of the weird physics work. It's super bizarre. He trips, but now he's standing up. He's standing up perfectly still. He's in a small, dark room. And he looks... he's trying to analyze, trying to gain his bearings, trying to figure out in any way what could have possibly happened. He turns and he looks, and to his left, he sees what he describes as a... he sees what he describes as a medical examination chair. Across from him, so that's the left of him, Nikolai says in front of him is a slightly open door. And to the right of him, he sees a window. A window looking outside. Nikolai says he could see treetops from where he was standing. He goes, there were trees out there with dense green leaves. and the leaves were rustling. I could see them blowing in the wind. A strong wind. It was broad daylight, yet the room itself was still dark. But even in his drunken state, Nikolai, I'm sure he's sobering up really quick at this point, he realizes it's winter. It's winter in Russia. There are no leaves on the trees. Looks like a summer day right outside that window. Like he's in some sort of trance. Nikolai turns and begins to walk towards the slightly open door. He's no longer in control of his own body. He is moving towards this door, whether he likes it or not. He pushes it open, and he walks into another room. This room is also dark, but on the ceiling, he can see this faint light emanating from something. He's continuing to walk completely against his will. He compared it to he was walking like a robot, very mechanical motions as he walks through this room, pushes open another door, and finds himself in another room. But in this room, there were a few particular areas that were bright. There was a couple different parts of the room that he could actually see light. And he said that these lights, I don't know if they were doing some sort of strobe action or slow on and off or however, but as he's in this room and he's looking at these, and he's really not even saying there's so much lights as there were parts of this room that seemed to be illuminated somehow. It's not like he was seeing light bulbs, but whatever the case was, he said, I felt like the lights were trying to hypnotize me. Even though he didn't have control of his body, he still had control of his mind. He still had his willpower. But these lights were slowly sapping that away as well. Suddenly, Nikolai realizes, unlike the first two rooms, he is not alone in here. He sees five humanoids. Five humanoids now standing in the room. He said the lights that were previously hypnotizing him, these humanoids were standing in front of them. Arms, legs, torsos, everything normal comparably to a human, but their heads were rectangular. One of them pulled out what he could only describe as a corn cob shaped device that gave off a little bit of light. And this humanoid points it directly at Nikolai. The corn cob begins to glow brighter and brighter and brighter. However, the darkness of the room did not change. Nikolai hears a voice in his head say, this one. And then another voice replied, no, not him. And that is when the first voice says, memory erasure is necessary. This terrified Nikolai. He knew they were talking about him, right? I mean, that's a pretty good guess. It terrifies him. He freaks out. He breaks from their control and turns and runs towards that door. The door that he had just entered to come into this room. He said, I ran right towards that door. And once I ran through it, I'm back in the hallway of the sports complex. And I'm screaming, I'm freaking out, and then I see you guys coming into the corridor, and I hear the sound of a door slam shut behind me. I turn, I look, and it's just a solid wall. Like it had always been, just a solid wall. He said, to me, it felt like I was there for 5 minutes. He was surprised when they said they'd been searching for him for an hour. He goes, it did not seem like that long for me at all. I walked through a couple rooms. I mean, not to be mundane about it, but I walked through a couple rooms and I saw these things and I took off running. That story was originally reported by Ex Libri UFO, which is a UFO investigation group in Russia. Albert Rosales, who's a big name in the humanoid, alien humanoid experiencer world, he posted this. It was also, the way I found about it was Sustained Disgust, but there's a couple different places. This story's been floating around for a while. You can go back to the year 2007, which is really the first year we can actually put a date on it. Even though it took place in 1978? I mean, I could say, oh, this story took place 100 years ago and I can make it up to date. But it was originally posted. We can date it to the year 2007. It was part of a mailing list called Prepare for Contact by Eileen Garut. It's interesting because this far predates the Backrooms. I think that's what a lot of people think of when they think of stories like this. I've actually been, there's a story that I've been looking at for a while whether or not to cover. It's really interesting. And I'm not necessarily saying the guy made it up, but it's titled, I Went to the Real Life Backrooms, which would be the same thing as me saying, I met Darth Vader. I got abducted by aliens and I met Darth Vader. It could be true. I could have met an alien that looked like Darth Vader. This guy could have actually clipped through another reality, and the only thing he could compare it to was the Backrooms, which is like the current hit right now. Paranormal experience slash ARG slash possibly real, possibly LARP type of thing. I do believe people can clip out into different realities. I 100% believe that's possible. But if you say things like that, it does sound more unbelievable. If you said, I went to the back rooms for real versus I slipped into another reality and never brought up the back rooms, I think we're all in agreement. One sounds simply by evoking a current fad, that makes it sound more made up. The kid may have actually had that experience. Again, I'm kind of going back and forth whether or not to cover it. Because we cover stuff like that. They just never call it the Backrooms. But this one actually predates the Backrooms by a long shot. I can't say 100% that this story happened, but I believe that this type of stuff can happen. And I find it very interesting that in 2007, they included the detail he was walking and he tripped and then found himself in an alternate universe, when we've covered more recent stories where that is also the case. And these stories are not connected in any way, shape, or form. By person, by culture, by country, by decade, nothing. So there might be something behind the idea of tripping. I remember my theory was that realities may not be physically lined up perfectly. In fact, it would be quite odd if they were. If you were on our Earth and you walked, let's say, to Earth 798, an alternate reality, who's to say they're both perfectly lined up, that it's literally like just one step? There could be a 20-foot drop between the two realities or more. And that could be what you're tripping on, is actually the realities not lining up perfectly, which would make sense. Why would realities be on a perfect plane? Interesting story, terrifying. This is one of those things that I would argue is completely one-off. Listen, you may be able to go to the sports complex. I know I mispronounced it horribly. It's in the show notes. You can look it up. Possible that this place was connected to this event, but it could just be that things were lining up in such a way. What I find fascinating about this, it's almost like an alien abduction story on accident. The UFO, we don't even know what these things were, but the UFO didn't show up to abduct him. It's like the UFO has landed. Let's say it's camouflaged as a bush and you have to go pee. And you're like, I'm just going to go pee behind that bush. Next thing you know, you phase through the bush and you're standing in the middle of their command center and you're pissing all over gray alien's face. You're like up on his command chair. You're like, ah, what's going on, guys? It's almost like that. He fell into an alien abduction experience, or whatever these things were. What I always think is interesting, too, and I could go on and on about this story. I love all of this stuff. I love all of this stuff, and I love that I get to share it with you guys. What I love about this story, too, is let's take it at its word. He sees these aliens, with these humanoids, whatever they were, and they said, memory erasure, necessary. You're needed. I guess I could just look over here. Yeah, measure erasure is necessary. Nicolay freaks out and runs out of the room. You assume in that narrative that his memory was not erased. Like, whew! I got out of there just in time. If they had erased my memory, then who knows? I would have never known where I went. There is a high likelihood that a lot of stuff happened in these rooms. And they did erase his memory. Just not all of it. He could have been strapped down to that chair in that dark room as these humanoids were doing truly inhuman experiments to him. Painful medical exams. That's what he doesn't remember. He was gone for an hour. And we could argue, and I think it's a fair argument, that time in one reality may not work at the same speed as our reality. Fair. But it's also possible that he was gone for an hour in that reality as well, and they did things to him. And they erased that. But he goes, wow, I got out of there right before they erased my memories. But little does he know, his subconscious does remember the things they did to him in the darkness. Things that no human should ever have to go through. Sometimes I believe that these aliens, they erase abductees' minds not to cover up their own crimes, but to lessen the trauma to their victims. They may not be erasing people's memories so they don't go out and tell the public, oh my God, I got abducted by aliens. They did all these things to me. They could be doing it as a mercy. Because if you did remember everything that the aliens did to you, it may drive you mad. You may not be able to go forward in life. Truly, by the definition of the word, inhuman experiments on human bodies over and over and over and over again. And countless number of alien abductees being subjected to medical experimentation against their will. It could have nothing to do with the aliens covering their tracks and everything to do with the aliens showing their victims some semblance of mercy. Because if we truly knew, if we didn't just read it in a book, if it happened to us, if we remembered what the aliens were doing to us, you might not be able to go on. How helpless would you feel knowing there is no way to stop it? You remember every single detail, and at any moment, it could happen again. The aliens could be doing us a favor by erasing our memories. We may not see it that way. We may see it as them trying to cover up their crimes against humanity. But if Nicolay remembered, truly remembered every moment that happened in those dark rooms, he may have physically returned back to our reality. But if those aliens did not erase his mind, the experience could have simply driven him insane. Imagine if you thought at any point you could fall into a room enveloped in darkness. A room full of alien life forms. A room built for one purpose. And that purpose is experimenting on you. How could you go on with life knowing such a thing existed? And at any moment, you could find yourself back in that chair. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be your email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm so glad you listened to it today.